Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Friday, April 1st, 2022. The African Union and other regional blocs call for calm in South Sudan.
The delegation said it held a series of meetings with President Salva Kiir and Vice President Riek Machar to encourage them to maintain peaceful dialogue on any concerns and return to full implementation of the peace deal.
And the U.S. Department of State has written to the Congress about the slow implementation of the 2018 peace deal.
There is clearly an effort right now to acknowledge that whatever has been attempted in South Sudan has not worked under the current leadership of South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. In a report to the U.S. Congress, the State Department said South Sudan's government has been slow in implementing the key commitments stated in the September 2018 peace agreement. The State Department says the 10-year-old South Sudan, quote, remains a deeply fragile nation beset by weak governance, pervasive insecurity, physical mismanagement, and widespread corruption, end of quote, and warned that Washington will continue to impose punitive measures against perpetrators of conflict in South Sudan. Nabil Biagio has more from Washington.
In a report seen by Reuters, the State Department wrote to Congress saying South Sudan's leadership is failing to implement key parts of a peace deal signed in 2018 and warned it will continue to impose costs on those perpetrating the conflict. It says 10 years after independence, South Sudan, quote, remains a deeply fragile nation beset by weak governance, pervasive insecurity, fiscal mismanagement, and widespread corruption, end quote. Cameron Hudson, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council's Africa Center here in the U.S., says it is rare that the administration would notify Congress of something when it's not required to, unless there is a change of policy or something is about to happen.
With respect to South Sudan, there have been many, many reporting, you know, requirements made by the Congress on the State Department, many letters, and so I don't know that I would read too much into it right now, other than the fact that there is clearly an effort right now to acknowledge that whatever has been attempted in South Sudan has not worked under the current leadership of South Sudan.
Brian Adeba, Deputy Director of Policy at the New York-based think tank The Century, says the report shows the U.S. is disappointed with the slow pace of carrying out South Sudan's peace agreement.
I think this report represents a very growing exasperation with the system in South Sudan. The political system, and especially, I think, the government with regard to its sluggish commitment to implementing the peace agreement in detail or in full. So the pending elements in the agreement sent a very clear message to the international community and to the United States that the South Sudanese government is not particularly keen on implementing this agreement.
Hudson agrees, saying there is a growing consensus between the Biden administration and congressional lawmakers that they must put more pressure on South Sudan's leaders to implement the provisions of the peace deal.
The Congress, frankly, and the administration are probably closer to being on the same page in South Sudan than in a lot of other places in the region, in Sudan or in Ethiopia, where there are vast disagreements over U.S. policy. I don't get the sense that there is that big a divide on South Sudan. There's a lot of disappointment on all sides on how the South Sudanese have handled their governance issues since independence.
Adebe says the report also shows the State Department is trying to draw more attention to the situation in South Sudan.
When you look at how South Sudan has also fallen off the radar after the peace agreement was signed, the international community thought that with the signing of the peace agreement, everything is going to be okay, and it did not keep its eyes on the ball. And in the meantime, while its attention was diverted, the government and the parties continued to delay the implementation of the agreement. And in large part, the culprit here is the government, really, to be honest. And so the call to imposing costs would be a very welcome one.
Adebe says the conflict in South Sudan is intertwined with massive corruption and the mismanagement of the country's resources by its leaders. He says he welcomes punitive measures from the U.S. and other international actors to push the leaders in South Sudan to end the conflict and finally tackle corruption. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
The African Union, IGAD, the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, and the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission have joined other leaders in appealing for calm in South Sudan. A high-level joint delegation comprising of officials from the African Union, IGAD, UNMISS, and the RJMAC held 2 days of consultation with South Sudanese leaders on the recent standoff in the country. Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba.
The delegation includes head of the African Union mission in South Sudan, Joram Biswaro, UNMISS chief Nicholas Asum, IGAD special envoy for South Sudan, Dr. Ismail Wise, and interim chairperson of the reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, Major General Charles Tai Gatwai. The delegation said it held a series of meetings with President Salva Kiir and Vice President Riek Machar to encourage them to maintain peaceful dialogue on any concerns and return to full implementation of the peace deal. The group also urged the transitional government to develop a roadmap for completing all tasks outlined in the peace deal before the transitional period expires. Most of the spokesperson of the organizations involved said they were unavailable for comment, but in a joint statement, the delegation said there was one item on the agenda to, quote, encourage the reaffirmation by the president and the vice president that they would not return the country to war. The delegation also urged the two leaders to de-escalate the heightened political tensions, dialogue amongst themselves, and return to full implementation of the agreement. Earlier this week, Juba residents expressed fear following recent political developments in the country, starting with the SPLM-IO's decision to no longer attend Security Mechanism meetings due to attacks on SPLA-IO forces in Unity and Upper Nile states, as well attacks on cantonment and training sites. Government forces also surrounded Machar's house in Juba 2 days after he called on the international community and the grantors of the peace deal to immediately intervene and save the peace deal from collapsing. Today's joint statement says the meeting with the presidency, which included the three vice presidents, James Waniga, Taban Dengai, and Rebecca Nyandeng de Mabur, emphasized the importance for members of the presidency to recommit to the full implementation of the 2018 peace deal. On Tuesday, President Kiir Mayardit reached out to Riek Machar to calm the tense political situation in the country. The delegation also called on the SPLM-IO to return to Security Mechanism meetings and for all parties to reach an agreement on the command structure of the unified forces. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar in Juba.
The Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, or SPLM-IO, says it has submitted recommendations to Sudanese leader General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan to pave way for implementing Chapter 2 of the peace agreement, which provides for security arrangements. A spokesperson in the office of the first Vice President Riek Machar says the recommendations include an immediate ceasefire. David Monodanga has more for VOA from Juba.
2 weeks ago, Sudanese military leader General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, who is also the current head of IGAD, visited Juba to find ways to expedite the implementation of the security arrangements stipulated in Chapter 2 of the peace agreement. Al-Burhan presented the parties with a proposal on how to break their dispute over the Unified Arms Command structure. The SPLM-IO says it submitted a number of recommendations to General Al-Burhan that would pave way for a smooth implementation of Chapter 2 of the peace deal. Pok Both Balwang, spokesperson in the office of the first Vice President Riek Machar, says the SPLM-IO has presented 17 recommendations, some of which are already in the peace deal.
What is needed now to de-escalate the situation? First is a political commitment from President Salva to the cessation of hostilities and the ceasefire agreements, because the attack on the cantonment sites of the SPLM-IO in Joko, in Upper Nile and Lokunshuk, and also in Mermer, Wadjak, Kaljak in Unity State, this is an act of war.
Balwang says the SPLM-IO asked for an urgent investigation of the violation of the cessation of hostilities agreement and for the SSPDF to stop attacking cantonment and training centers. In addition, he says the group is calling on the SSPDF to immediately withdraw their forces from areas they captured from the SPLM-IO in Upper Nile and Unity States.
This area was violently occupied by the SSPDF. Also, we called for an urgent investigation of all violations to the cessation of hostilities.
South Sudan in Focus reached out to South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makwe for comment, but the government spokesman declined to comment, saying these are sensitive security matters that he cannot speak to media about.
No, cannot just be discussing issues in the news. These are security issues that cannot be discussed. Sorry.
On Sunday, South Sudanese government forces and National Security Service forces surrounded Machar's residence in the capital Juba for 12 hours after Machar asked regional and international leaders to intervene and end renewed fighting in Unity and Upper Nile states, which are considered his strongholds. Balwang says the forces are still surrounding Machar's house. He says the forces are deployed in the evening hours and are withdrawn in the morning hours each day. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Officials and residents in the Abyei administrative area say calm has returned to the region after last month's violence. The area's government spokesperson says some residents who fled their homes due to the fighting have started returning to the area. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Dozens of people were killed and many others injured last month when suspected armed militia from Twitch County of Warab State attacked citizens in a net market in Abyei due to a dispute over land ownership. Warab State Minister of Information Ring Deng Ading said some community members in Twitch County believe that part or even all of the net area belongs to them and that some people of Abyei might take their land to Sudan since the final status of the area hasn't been established. The incident prompted President Salva Kiir to form an 11-member panel headed by the Vice President for Service Cluster, Hussein Abdul Baghi, to investigate the root causes of the conflict between the Ngok Dinka and the people of Twitch County. Ajang Deng Mian, the Abyei Special Administrative Area spokesperson, says calm has returned to the area after fighting in parts of Abyei North and South. Mian says the committee which the president tasked to look into the root causes of the conflict between the Ngok Dinka and the people of Twitch County is conducting investigations. He says the two communities are making arrangements to sign a cessation of hostilities agreement.
Say this very clearly, the committee is coming up with something that is very fair to stabilize the situation. We are for it. No, unless the other side is putting conditions that where we feel like it is not. But up to now, I don't think there is. We never went on attack there. We are the ones who want attack all the time. This is what the community has been telling the committee.
Abyei town resident Bar Mayuen says the security situation is calm today, although residents still fear there could be more attacks in the future. Mayuen says residents are beginning to resettle into their villages with the hope that there will be no more fighting.
There were people who crossed to the other side of the river, and others came to the town. The living condition is growing worse, so some people decided to return to their homes. Some people said it is better to die at your home than to live stressing. Other people, because some people settled at their relative homes in the town, that is why they returned. There has not been any security incident reported, but the people still fear because anything could happen again anytime.
Daniel Adekera, a spokesperson for the United Nations Interim Security Force in Abyei, told South Sudan in Focus he was in a meeting and could not comment earlier today. In a statement on Thursday, UNISFA's force commander and acting head of mission, Major General Benjamin Olufemi Sowier, said Vice President Hussein Abdul Baghi met UNISFA's leadership to assess its role during the clashes within the context of its mandate to protect civilians under imminent threat of physical violence. General Sowier says UNISFA continues to, quote, operate under the UN principle of impartiality, integrity, professionalism, and respect for diversity. The mission would continue to prioritize security and the protection of civilians, end quote. Earlier last month, Abraham Kualinyuan, a political science lecturer at the University of Juba, said the committee tasked to investigate the violence in Abyei should talk to local people, including the young people and women in Abyei and Tweed County, to resolve the problem without involving politicians. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Bor.
From Bor, we move to Western Sudan, where the president of the Darfur Bar Association, Saleh Mahmoud, says there is no change in the situation in Darfur. Mahmoud says the military council will not show commitment to cooperate with the International Criminal Court in Hague. The court will start trial of Ali Mohammed Abdel Rahma, also known as Kusheb, a paramilitary leader who will face 31 accounts of crimes allegedly committed in Darfur.
Survivors and victims were always crying and voicing out for the implementation of justice to bring perpetrators who were implicated in the commissions of the three horrible crimes, that is genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. And then the victims and survivors were very much confused when the situation of Darfur was referred from the UN Security Council to the ICC. And there were arrest warrants that have been issued against Kosheb and Bashir, and the rest, like Ahmed Haroun and Abdurrahim Mohamed Hussein. But after the issuing of the arrest warrants, nothing happened, in fact, until Kosheb voluntarily submitted or surrendered himself to the ICC, which was not through the support of any commitment from the government of Sudan at that time. The significance of this trial is that, yes, maybe hopes of the survivors are revived, but still they are saying the significance is also very much distorted with the fact that Bashir and Haroun and Ibrahim Mohamed Hussein, even after the signing of the two referendums by the government of Sudan and the two ICC prosecutors, that is Fatou Bensouda and the present prosecutor, Ahmed Khan, up to this moment, people don't see any serious steps from the side of the government of Sudan to show that there is a sufficient political will to cooperate with the ICC. This is very much affecting this trial if Omar al-Bashir and the rest are still beyond the reach of justice.
Do you think the Sudan government is going to hand over Omar al-Bashir and the rest of the people whom are committed to Darfur genocide?
It's now becoming more doubtful because after the revolution, there were voices from the transitional military council saying that they were not going to surrender Omar al-Bashir to the ICC. But later on, I think there were other voices from the cabinet, especially Abdullah Hamdok, as a prime minister who resigned. He stated that they were willing to surrender Omar al-Bashir to the ICC and that they have ratified and signed a referendum of understanding, two referendum of understanding with the ICC prosecutor. But up to this moment, I think people are more like becoming confused if this now military junta will be willing to cooperate with the ICC. It's doubtful.
That's Saleh Mahmoud, president of Darfur Bar Association. He was speaking with Nadia Taha here in Washington. The International Medical Humanitarian Organization, Doctors Without Borders, also known by its French acronym, MSF, is reporting higher cases of hepatitis E among internally displaced persons living in a camp in Bantu. A medical coordinator for MSF says his agency is working with the health ministry to vaccinate camp residents and save lives. Sheila Pony reports for VOA from Juba.
MSF medical coordinator Just Kate Danka says cases of hepatitis E have been increasing since July 2021. Danka says more than 600 cases have been diagnosed in MSF's health facility in the Bentiu area since 2014.
There were 667 patients that have been confirmed with hepatitis E, and 13 of them died. And then in this year, beginning of this year, it has been ongoing like that. And that is why we're very worried, because we even have seen a person die with hepatitis E every week.
Danka says many IDPs are being infected by waterborne diseases due to poor water and sanitation conditions. Hepatitis E is caused by a virus that infects the liver. It is usually transmitted by contaminated water. It is especially harmful for pregnant women because it can cause severe liver failure and death. Hepatitis E symptoms can be managed, but there is no cure. Danka says MSF is scaling up vaccination and awareness campaigns in Bentiu to control the spread of the virus.
MSF is working in the Bentiu IDP camp. They have a hospital there where they're doing case management, and all cases with hepatitis E are being referred there. So they're being assessed, and if they need hospital admission, they're being treated. They're doing the case management. And besides that, there's a health promotion program going on inside the camp as well to make sure that people are aware of the disease and how to prevent it. And then, of course, we just did the hepatitis E vaccination campaign.
On March 22nd, the Ministry of Health and MSF began a first round of hepatitis E vaccination, which ended on Wednesday. Danka says the second and third doses will be available in the coming month. This is the first time the vaccine has been used in a large immunization effort, and it is being administered amid an active hepatitis E outbreak. The hepatitis E virus, like cholera, spreads in situations with poor sanitation and contaminated water. Director General for Prevention Health Services in the Ministry of Health, Dr. John Rumuno, said efforts are underway to improve sanitation in condition with key ministries.
We initiated coordination through having a task force for hepatitis E virus in the country, and led by the Ministry of Health with membership of Line Ministry in charge of water sanitation and hygiene, and the health cluster, and of course the overall humanitarian response to the flooding, which is also addressing issues of water and sanitation, is led by the Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs. So there is a robust coordination for the different sector, health,
Hepatitis E is caused by a virus that infects the liver. It is especially harmful to pregnant women because it can cause severe liver failure and death. Its symptoms can be managed, but there is no cure. Danka says vaccination would help minimize morbidity and mortality among camp residents.
Even though they were doing this vaccination campaign, which is a new thing, and we really hope to see a very good benefit for the population, reduce the morbidity and the mortality, so the amount of deaths and the sickness of these cases. Mm-hmm. But we also know that this is not the only way. It needs to be an approach from multiple angles, so not just vaccination, but it also needs a better water and sanitation situation.
Danka says in the IDP camp in Bentiu, situation has been deteriorating over time, especially over the last 2 years due to flooding. In addition to the successful vaccination of 91% of the target population, MSF says it is important to improve the water and sanitation situation in IDP camps. For VOA News, I am Sheila Aponi in Juba.
We love to hear your comments about stories in this broadcast. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. Most of your comments this week are calling for calm and urging South Sudan's leaders to work together to end hostilities, such as Manwag Majong from Rombek Lake State, who says, "For South Sudan not to go back to war, as said by President Kiir and Dr. Riak, the two leaders with their supporters in government should stop words of war, the blame game and hate speeches for peace to prevail in South Sudan. I am also requesting my fellow South Sudanese to act responsibly on social media without inciting war, which you will witness its dangers and consequences in past years." Martin Manuel Wugol in Uganda says, "Hello, John and Nabil. Allow me to thank the President of the Republic of South Sudan for his timely press release reassuring the people of South Sudan to be calm and go about their normal activities because having peace in the country benefits citizens in various ways. Congratulations to our President and the people of South Sudan." Jacob Dior Machueng from Juba says, "It is the right time for President Kiir and his first Vice President Riek Machar to know that nobody wishes or wants to add 2022 to 2016 and 2013 on the calendar of conflicts. We are tired of bloodshed and the hatred that accompanies it. President Kiir should stick to his national address where he said he wouldn't take the country back to war." Saber Isaac Khamis of Yambio in Western Equatoria State says, "Hi, VOA South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's peace guarantors should make sure there is no going back to war for South Sudanese. The situation report is not friendly between the warring parties. At any time, the current peace can collapse due to poor engagement by the peace guarantors. The international community must gear up their usual pressure on the signatories to follow what they inked in Khartoum." Peter Goj Anyang Majongdul in Block 3 in Bor Town says, "Hello, John and Nabil, pointing accusing fingers to each other among the signatories to the revitalized peace agreement will not take the country ahead. Rather, it will drag the country into imminent war. So let all parties unite and work for the common agenda to take the country toward everlasting peace, to end the suffering of women and children in camps in and out of the country since the onset of the conflict 8 years ago." And finally, Chol Philip Kwan in Bor Town of Jongole State says, "Hello, VOA News. There is something our leaders need to know. South Sudan belongs to all of us as the citizens of South Sudan. The people of South Sudan are tired of wars by killing themselves. So those who force them to fight themselves will one day be punished by the Almighty God. Thanks." The comments heard here do not reflect the views of this program or of VOA. We appreciate hearing from all of you. Keep those comments coming.
Keep your comments brief and we will sample some of them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now end the show with the song Salam by Manyang. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Remember to join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Darin Salam, Janga we dar a deal, Darin Salam, Janga we dar a deal, Darin Salam, Kunara we dar a deal, Darin Salam, Janga we dar a deal. Salam alaikum na twish mayadi, Deku salam, yeah. Salam alaikum denka abyei.